Ooh-wee. We just went through a ringer of an election. Feelings are soaring high. So, this week, I'm going to talk about two important lessons I learned as an activist in my 20s and how they still ring true today. And how they might help you through, well, anything, including, but not limited to, an incredible election. If I had to, I could boil it down into one word: nourishment. What do you say? Doesn't that sound good?
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.
Do you crave clarity and insight? Do you sense that your intuition is trying to tell you important things, but you have a hard time trusting it? Do you want access to your own internal wisdom and to understand how it operates so that you can guide your life in ways that are meaningful and satisfying? Well then, welcome. I'm glad you are here. I'm your host, Aimée Cartier. I've been a professional psychic since around 2007. I'm the author of the book Getting Answers, Using Your Intuition to Discover Your Best Life. I've been teaching others to understand and use their own intuitive and empathic abilities for more than a decade. Join me each week for true stories and tools that will inspire you to take seriously your own inner knowing, that internal sense that you have uniquely tailored to you and designed to not only set you on the roads that are best for you, but also help you avoid the ones that are treacherous. It's time for you to own your intuition. Thank you for sticking with me. In late September, I launched a year-long program for solutionaries. The high amount of activity of doing so and hosting 3 days of free live events, well, it required an equal response of rest to replenish after that output. So that is what I did. I rested after my launch, which means I haven't been recording anything for you. You know, of course, I still love you. And I'm back. So, thanks for sticking around. I'm glad to be back. And thank you, always, for those of you who reach out to tell me the words on this podcast speak to you. My last episode, number 75, entitled Joy for Your World Worries, which I might add is still relevant today, has actually come in second of my all-time most popular podcasts. So thank you, and keep sharing, please. We need this now. It's still completely blown out of the water in popularity by episode number 45, entitled How Do I Know It's My Intuition Speaking? So if you haven't heard those yet, they are there for you. And you know, your stars and reviews of this podcast really do make my day. So, let's talk. As usual, I've got some true stories for you. I studied politics in college because I knew it was important to me to add positively to this world. I wish I could remember how or if there was a defining moment where I realized that this was integral to why I was here, but I can't. To my recollection, it was just something I always knew. I'm here to make a difference. It's important to me to help make this world a better place. To the reckoning of my early 20-something self, politics was an obvious way that change was made. So that is what I studied. To me, it was like 101, how to make a difference. My first job out of college was for Oregon Public Interest Group. I walked door to door and raised money for a recycling campaign. I lived in a state, Oregon, obviously, who had been recycling for 25 years at the time. The original bottle bill, as it is called, was put into place in 1971. Its purpose was to reduce litter and increase recycling. What the bottle bill means in Oregon is that if you bring back your cans or bottles, you actually get a 5-cent deposit back for each item. When the bottle bill was created, drinks like Snapple didn't exist. So this ballot measure I was campaigning for was to update the bottle bill so that it covered all the beverages on the market today, the single-serving beverages. That would mean it wasn't just a carbonated beverage like a Coke can that you could get a deposit return back on. It would be everything. Your kombucha, your Snapple, your lemonade, your iced tea, all single-serving beverage containers. A market that had greatly expanded since the bottle bill's inception. The major opposition to updating this bottle bill came from corporations like Coca-Cola and a grocery store chain, though I can't remember which one, except that it was not Fred Meyer. These corporations preferred the version of the world where they didn't have to take any responsibility for their byproducts, where they would be made, and whatever happened afterward, that was of no one's concern. I think they feared that if the bottle bill grew in Oregon, other states would follow. At the beginning of the election period, the ballot measure I was canvassing for had an 80% approval rating. Oregonians love recycling. It's a no-brainer. By the end of the race, our approval had dropped to 40%. The slogan they won on, the only thing they told people was this: it's confusing. They made elaborate commercials implying that the future of recycling was going to be so confusing that we would be better off just sticking with the status quo. Like, could we recycle a can of condensed milk or baby formula? Who could know? It's confusing. It was a slogan that not only spoke ignorance, it was denigrating. It implied that every person was so stupid, so without a brain, that they suddenly, in contrast to the last 25 years, could not use their eyeballs to look at the top of a can and see whether it said 5 cents OR or not. In Oregon, with the institution of the bottle bill in 1971, cans and bottles are marked with an OR 5 cents. It's printed there on all deposit cans. You literally only have to look at the top of whatever container you are drinking from to discern, is it worth a nickel if I bring it back or not? Let me say again, Oregonians had already been doing this for 25 years, using their eyeballs to understand if it was worth a deposit and acting accordingly. What I learned during that time period were two hugely pivotal things that shaped me for life. The first and hardest to swallow was this: money buys votes. For every $1 million you spend, you sway 10% of the votes. We started at an 80% approval rating, so they spent $4 million, the amount that was needed to get us into the minority. Done. This is Aimée Cartier, and if you just tuned in, you are listening to the Own Your Intuition show. And today, I am telling a story, and in a roundabout way, getting to an important piece that is necessary, not only for intuition, but also for well-being in the world. So, fast forward to 2024, just a few days post-election. You know, I've really come to appreciate the internet again over the last few days. It's sort of facilitated my processing of it all. Because as I write this episode, we have just finished the 2024 election, which for myself, for many, has devastating results. On the internet, you look and see what other people are saying, and you ping off of it yourself. Does this make sense to me? Can I latch on to that idea? Does it bring me hope? Does it stabilize my nervous system? Does it help me understand WTF is actually going on here? And the resounding question that was coming up for me right after the election was, how? How did 74,327,218 people cast a vote for someone I consider a loose cannon? The thing that was most resonant to me was something said by University of North Carolina professor Tressie McMillan Cottom. She said, Donald Trump's weird gift is that he knows what people really want. Not what they say they want, not what they report to a pollster, not what they say at Thanksgiving. He goes to the heart of what they really want. They want to feel like they're winning, even if everything around them says they're losing. They want to feel like someone is fighting for them, even when it's obvious he's only fighting for himself. They want to think that they are on the precipice of owning a great country at the height of its history. And he is willing to tell people anything. And that is very useful when you are trying to tap into people's deep anxieties and their desire to be deluded about reality. She said, people don't care about plans as much as we thought they did. Most Americans really want a really good story about how their lives are going to be better. And in this election, DT's story was simple, and you could remember it, and you understood it. Things are bad. I will make it good. Thank you, Tressie McMillan Cottom, for saying this. I would only counter this one thing. I don't think it speaks to people's desire to be deluded about reality. I think it speaks to human desire. These are human goals. Want to feel like you are winning. Want to feel like someone is fighting for you. Want to feel like you are on the precipice of something great. Even these goals that she listed are goals of safety. They are goals of belonging. They are goals of meaning, of being cared for, of being a part of something grand. I think those goals are lofty and human, and wonderfully, undeniably true for most of us. We all want that. We want to belong. We want someone in our corner. We want meaning and to be part of something beautiful and grand and true. I think these are meaningful goals. I want them too. I don't want them at the cost of someone else. That to me is a fail. It means we're limping along, or we're building something only half functional, something that cares only in part for the gorgeousness of the all. Still, all of this that she said makes sense to me. It tracks with what I learned in my 20s. This also tracks with the second pivotal thing I learned in my 20s, working on a no-brainer recycling campaign that lost. The second thing was this. It is likely to always feel like there is more good work to do than there is time. But if I don't set limits, if I don't prioritize taking care of myself along the way, I will have zero capacity to contribute. Therefore, the equation of how much work there is to do, a whole world's worth, is not the most imperative question for me. Tending to my own energy as I do the work I deem important is. If I let a whole world's worth of need dictate my human body's actions, I will be incapacitated. I've been teaching the importance of self-care and how it is directly related to intuition and your capacity to hold others and greatness since I started teaching in the mid-2000s. Because of a failed bottle bill campaign in 1996. Because I had to peel out. After that campaign, I had to bail from activism and take a job waiting tables at the Olive Garden to repair and recuperate. I have no shame in making that choice, of course, because it is absolutely what I needed to do at the time. But there was also a certain deadness or utter lack of vitality to that situation for me that also sort of simultaneously haunted and bored me, even while I was doing it. It was placeholding. A placeholder giving me the space and time I needed to look away and heal from trying to keep pace with the world's need without assessing and tending where my human body energy could also meet that. Waiting tables at the Olive Garden was not regenerative for me. I had a student once who, when she started working with me, already understood the importance of self-care, Michelle Cassandra Johnson. It is so rare that it was striking to me. I had her on my show. It's episode number 8. I highly recommend listening to it. And I asked her about this. I asked her, how did you learn this? Michelle used to be a therapist, and she said, she learned it by watching colleagues die. She saw how doing the work of helping others without helping self literally caused an early death. She wanted to be in for the long game. She knew she could make more of a difference if she was. Striking, isn't it? So it all circles together in my mind. It absolutely makes sense to me that the majority of people in this country would vote for a party line that said, "It's broken. I will fix it." Yes, please. It makes sense to me that the majority of people don't have the time or the energy and the wherewithal to be like, well, what is the plan? Would that plan work? Is it in line with my values? We live in a world, in a society that has for years prioritized progress and constant movement forward at any cost. A machine-like movement forward that is detached from sustainable cycles. Of course, no one has time to look behind the curtain. They are too busy trying to keep up, to pay their rent or mortgage, to figure out what to do when their dishwasher stops working, to get their kids an education and somehow try to shield them from the harms of an uber-connected two-dimensional world. While going to work, grocery shopping, doing dishes on repeat, feeding themselves, and attempting to plan or save for their futures. All without more than a night's sleep per day, with no rest. We live in single-family homes where the onus for all those things at once, and many more, is on the one or two adults living there. Who has time to ask about a world plan? "It's broke, I'll fix it" is an uber-soothing message for a collective nervous system on fried and overdrive. We are exhausted. We want and maybe need someone else to solve it all. But here's the thing for me. I don't actually believe we are meant to go it alone, nor have someone solve it all for us. Because in reality, neither one of those actually feels good. There is a middle ground. Just like there is in making a difference in this world and doing so in a way that coincides with your actual human body capacity. Just like there is in being the unique person you are and being a part of the whole, belonging. Just like there is in taking care of the things that you are good at and letting someone else who is gifted in other things do their part. Just like there is in taking care of your own needs and resting in the arms and gifts of another. There is also a sustainable regenerative cycle and blueprint that the earth has been showing us and operating on and exemplifying for about 4.5 billion years. And for the record, most of our species' existence, we've been anchored in that blueprint. It is not unknown to our bodies. It's there in the sky, in the moon's cycles, in the seasons. It surrounds us in every moment. And turning to that is part of, or maybe the whole, I don't know, what will help us tend to ourselves so that we might tend to one another. As I believe I said in episode number 75, I don't have all the answers, but I do feel as though they are in our reach. And I want to keep putting that out there very specifically, because it's fine to sob lay on your bed immobilized after what may feel like devastating results, that is part of self-care. But when you've cried it out and found some comfort where you can, so is getting up and showing up for the things you cared about to begin with. I voted for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz because I believe in people, tolerance, support, and nourishing others and this planet in every way we can. Because I love this planet. And I think women are amazing. Those things are still true for me. Why did you vote the way you voted? Are those things still true for you? So I'm offering the threads that I see right now in the hopes that it will spark some insight in you too. I'm continuing to contemplate and create and be open to the understanding of what this moment is offering us. Because for me, that feels like the only way forward. Because as far as I can see, to create a future that feels good to us, it's going to take all of us. And I don't mean all of us blues, the 70,402,926 of us right now that voted for Kamala. I understand that there are those who voted for DT because he stands for a bigotry or an exclusivity rather than inclusivity that they benefit from. But I would also guess more people voted for him because they didn't have an answer and they were energized by the idea of someone else figuring it out for them. Divided, we can only get so far. United, we are stronger in all cases across time. We are meant to tend to self and other, I believe. As far and wide as I can see, compassion and love still seem to be the only answers. So, tend to self. Please cry if you need to. I've spent time curled up in my bed, afraid and heartbroken. I've allowed myself to feel all the feels and play out all the stories in my mind so that I can sob and wail and get them out of my body. And I will, for as long as they continue to surface. I will give them time in a healthy way, crying in my candlelight bathtub, sobbing into my pillow. But I also will be getting up and contemplating and organizing to answer the questions that plague me. The remaking of a quilt that cares for all. So I'm going to close with two things. One, a reminder that probably the primary thing I offered in this episode is the necessary equation of self-care, of self-nourishment, even in a world that clamors with need. You simply can't tend to the whole if you don't tend to yourself. Ever. Or not with the longevity and bigness that you are truly capable of. The second thing to close are the words of Toni Morrison, whose words, even all these years after she is gone, breathe life into a moment for me. In all of the things that came to me on the internet in these post-election days, her words were the ones that helped me the most. She said, "The grandeur of life is that attempt. It's not about that solution. It is about being as fearless as one can and behaving as beautifully as one can under completely impossible circumstances. We are already born. We are going to die. So you have to do something interesting that you respect in between." My friends, until we meet again, take care. This is Aimée Cartier. Thank you for listening. If this episode sparked insight in you, I would love to hear it. Shoot me an email, DM me on Instagram. I'm at Aimée Cartier. Here is something you should also know. Behind the scenes for the last couple months, I've been working on a self-study course called Intuition for Changemakers. And if I'm being honest, woo-wee, does this feel like the perfect time for that? It's for people who care for this world and want to help tend and nourish it, but also want to do so in a way that enlivens and vitalizes their soul instead of drains it to the core. It's the roadmap to avoid getting burned out and having to wait tables at the Olive Garden if that doesn't speak to you like it didn't speak to me. It's the roadmap to garnering the support of your intuition, which works at lightning speed and is full of all kinds of big ideas and solutions that your smaller self might not have ever have thought of. It's for people who want to shine as brightly as the world needs them to right now. It's self-study. It comes with a workbook. And you can do it on your own schedule. If you'd like to be among the first to know when it's ready, get thee to my mailing list. You can do so by giving yourself a little gift too. If you click on the link in the show notes or go to aimeecartier.com, you can download a free tool that will allow you to know your best choice for anything using your own breath. Downloading this tool also puts you on my mailing list. I'm not a spammer. I don't share your info. I'll be in your inbox to let you know when I have a podcast coming out and if I've got something you might want to know about, like when Intuition for Changemakers is ready for you. Sending you great love. I'll see you next time.
I am but a part of this. All I am is all I give. Everything that comes to me comes as sure as I will breathe.